Hey everybody, this is Coach Dominic and I'm working for Rastafechter, a German professional basketball team. And right now, you're listening to the Coach D podcast.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are, near or far, high or low. You're listening to the Coach D podcast. And listeners, I'm extremely excited to have this guest in the studio with me. And again, it's for me, listeners, it's bigger than basketball. It's just about the lessons you can learn in basketball and in sports in general. And I think everyone just wants to be that all-round great athlete. So without further ado, let me cue in the music and introduce this guest the right way. Listeners, stepping on the court today, we have a special guest joining us, a renowned expert in physical preparation for basketball teams and sports teams in general in Germany. With his expertise and dedication, he has been instrumental in elevating the performance of numerous basketball teams through innovative training methods and a focus on holistic player development. Join us today as we delve into the world of sports training and learn from the insights on optimizing player performance and achieving success on the court. Listeners, please give a warm welcome to Coach Dominic.
Ooh la la. That was a warm welcome. I did not expect that, to be honest. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Coach, just before we even get started, one, thank you so much again for being on the podcast. And just to give the listeners a little story, as a coach, I'm always a student of the game and I like to learn from football coaches, tennis coaches, because I believe that certain drills or exercises or workouts or certain things that, you know, trainers prepare athletes for, you can cross between different sports in terms of this similar principles, similar movements that can be applied in football, basketball, in sports in general. And one thing I love about your page, and listeners, don't worry, all the info to follow him on his Instagram and other socials will be in the description of this podcast, is just how the players are engaged with your exercises, your warm-ups, your workouts. They're learning on, or they're working on so many skills without them realizing, and it's innovative. Like, I don't think I've seen some of the stuff that you've showed to your players. I don't think I've seen anywhere. So I love the newness and the freshness. So before we delve into that, Coach, talk to us. How was your physical and how was your mental?
I mean, I'm awesome. I'm working for Rastafechter as a performance coach, basketball team, professional basketball team in Germany, and yeah, we just got a win against Bayern Munich yesterday. The big Bayern Munich, who participate also in the EuroLeague, and yeah, we were down by 19 points in the third quarter, and we played at their place, and we somehow won in overtime. And this, for a small team like Fechter, this is obviously a big achievement, and that's why I'm in a very good mood. We had a thrilling bus ride back, and I'm happy to be on the show, and I hope I can be a little bit of help by sharing my thought processes and ideas.
Absolutely. And just before we were, first off, a huge congrats to doing, I mean, to come down from 19 points, like the momentum swing, the X's and O's, and the players definitely must have left the court just feeling absolutely amazing. So hats off to that. And just in terms of, before we even speak about the profession that you're in, Coach, kind of take us back to a young coach who maybe was still figuring out the sport that he liked and wasn't as big, tall, as athletic. What were some of those earlier experiences of sport for you growing up?
Yeah, I mean, I was playing basketball at an early age, and at some point pretty early in my life, when I was 20, now I'm 37, you know, my back started hurting, but you know how things are. When you're young, you can go around these things and your body figures out a way. But that only lasted until when I was 25 years old, and then there was like a big bang of events. You know, my back was just, it wasn't working anymore. I woke up in the morning, it took me 30 minutes to get out of bed, and up until then I was only, let's say, I only went to the weight room, and I was maybe more focusing on the bodybuilding kind of stuff. Yeah, okay. That's how a lot of people do it, I guess, in the beginning.
Right.
And then at some point I was just asking myself, okay, there must be a solution. I'm 25 years old. You know, it's not possible that I cannot walk anymore. I need to find solutions. And that's basically where I started diving into the training topic. And I studied education, and I finished my master degrees. My subjects were physical education and English.
Yes.
And with the age of 25, I completely switched up my workout routines. There was a time when the FMS was, you know, the functional movement screen that was starting to come about. It was 2011, I think. And that was the time where I started diving a little bit deeper into training, because I was just so obsessed with finding a solution for my problem. And at some point, I slowly figured out that this is something that I love doing. It took me a little while to figure out my problem. But back then, when I was studying in Göttingen, German city, they had a professional team there, and I sort of got to connect with the head coach back then for the professional team. And because in the team where I was playing, he also, the coach had youth players playing, and they would play for our team, and the coach from the professional team sometimes went with us on the weight trips, and I happened to sit next to him on the bus, and we started to talk a lot and interchange ideas. And yeah, this was exactly the time where I couldn't go anymore with basketball. It was just not possible. I couldn't do it. My back, the situation was just bad. And that's when he asked me if I would be interested to train pros. For him, you know, Göttingen is a small team. Back then they didn't have the financial situation to have a full-time S&C coach or professional coach.
Right.
And I decided to finish my master degrees, and then I stepped into the world of strength and conditioning for a professional basketball team. But it was full-time, but I had to do something else as well. I had to be the team manager as well, so I had to prepared all the hotels and everything around the team I had to do. But I was also a performance coach. And that's what I did for 6 years in Göttingen. Then I switched teams to Bamberg. And this is now my second team with Fechter. And this is basically how it all began and where I am right now. The passion is still, the fire is still alive. I love what I'm doing. It's a hobby. I always say it's a hobby. And I'm very happy that I can work in this profession. It doesn't feel like work.
Right. Coach, same thing, you know, and that's the beauty about when you're passionate about what you do, even in the after hours, the extra hours, the waking up in the morning, 95% of the time, even 98%, it really doesn't feel like work. And one thing that you touched on that I think was super cool is you really assessed what wasn't working for you, why you was getting that back pain, and rather than being like, you know what, let me just put basketball sport down altogether, let me really figure out the function of movement and how I can just move more efficiently, how the body works, what's the mechanics behind it. So when you kind of look back now in 2020 hindsight, what was not going so well for you that kind of led to the back pain, and what adjustments did you make that allowed just freedom of movement and just a deeper understanding of how your body works?
That was a very interesting journey, because I have to say, next to my studies, I was always working as a, you know, as a trainer or let's say as a strength and conditioning coach in a commercial gym.
Right.
So I had to do with a lot of different people, but like when this back pain really started, I think it started when I was 28, and it lasted until I was 31, 32, up until I found the solution, what was really going on, and where I could really fix it, let's say.
Right.
And during that time phase, I'm usually a very happy person. I laugh a lot and I smile a lot, but that was simply at some point, you know, people didn't see that in me anymore, because I was really, everything that I did back then was related to my back. And sometimes I had a good day, and then all of a sudden I had a bad day. And what really helped me to make the, you know, to cut a long story short, in, I think it was 2020, I'm not sure if you ever heard about the functional range conditioning system, FRC. It's basically a system about mobility and how you can address joints that, you know, don't seem to work as much as they, you know, should work.
Right.
And that was basically when I went to the certification. It was the first certification they were holding in Germany, and I just went there because I was interested. But after the 2.5 hour car ride, my back was hurting again, and you know, I got pretty negative at that time.
Right.
But these guys, you know, I was there a little early at the seminar, and these guys started talking to me, and you know, during the seminar, we basically went about the whole body, big joints, and we at some point came to the lumbar spine, to the lower back, and they pulled me out in the front, and they asked me to do a lumbar segmentation. That is basically just a movement. It's not a cat cow. People, you've probably heard about cat cow when you're on all your fours and move your spine.
Right.
But this is a more subtle movement. They actually want you to try to move each segment by segment of the spine.
Oh, wow.
Piece by piece, actually.
Yes.
And when you do a cat cow, you just move your spine, but you move within the limitations of your spine, if you have any. And what was the missing link for me? I for some reason wasn't able to move my lower back individually anymore. So whenever I wanted to move my lower back, I couldn't do it. I basically moved my upper back. So for some reason, because of all the training that happened to that area, I wasn't able to move it anymore. And what they did in the seminar, they pulled me to the front, and it was obvious. It was so obvious.
Right.
And then they told me, okay, you know what? This is what you do every day, 3 times 5 minutes. And please give us feedback. And I was at that point, I did everything, physical therapy. I went to a chiropractor, to an osteopath. I tried Rolfing. I tried different styles of massages. I trained like I said, I really tried a lot of things. And then they would just tell me that I have to move my spine 3 times 5 minutes, very particular. And yeah, I started doing it. And it is amazing. After 2 to 3 days, all of a sudden I woke up. And I didn't have, you know, the extent of my back pain would just slowly fizzle out. And
wow.
All of a sudden, I didn't have any problems anymore. And I was just, how do you say that? Dumbfounded. I was like, it's not possible.
Yeah.
It is not possible that this was a solution for my problem that I was actually looking for more than 4 years. And yeah, I still do it on a daily basis. I had two since then. I had like two relapses, but not, you know, it was like five, six days and then it was gone again.
Right.
But yeah, since then, this was my learning experience. And I understand, you know, I cannot apply this to everybody because everybody of us is different.
Right.
But it is still up until today. It's still a nice tool in my toolbox, because what is interesting, whenever I work with a player who, for example, suffers from back pain, and I ask him to move his lower back, like segment by segment.
Right.
This is all up until now. It's like 100. It's really 100% that players have issues doing that. And I don't know. Like I said, it's my experience, and I use it still. I have it as a tool in my toolbox, but I understand that it's not the cure for everything.
Right. Absolutely. See, and that's one thing I think even players and coaches are really starting to realize. This is why you hear the LeBrons and certain players just invest so much money into their body, because you could be the most skilled player, but especially when you think about longevity, when you put the basketball down and you just get on with your life, you still want to be able to move, and you don't necessarily want any soreness or back pain or stiffness. So it's definitely the marriage of, you know, the skills based approach, but also just longevity, you know, the joints, everything moving as fluidly and as optimal as possible. So as it relates to basketball players, you know, can you share some innovative drills you've implemented for basketball players in Germany just to enhance their skills and just make sure that they are physically prepared?
You mean in terms of basketball warm-ups, because that's where I probably can talk to you
absolutely
the most. I mean, if someone just looks at the videos that I recently posted on Instagram, first of all, it was never my intention to post that. because what we do at Rastafechter, and that's not just me, you know, we have a huge youth department, we have a second professional team, and these small-sided games, as we call them, they happen at every age level. So like from the under eights to the pros, we are using them. And my idea in the beginning was to make videos of these games so that all the other coaches from our organization could also use them, you know, right, within their right. practices. And now I also have to say, this is my 10th season now working as a strength and conditioning coach. And I have included these games before already, but not to the extent I'm including these games now, because at some point I was just so bored with the stuff that I was doing. Because you got to understand, like during a basketball season, we have 150, at least 150 team practices. Yeah. And that basically means that I have to start team practice 150 times if I'm not sick.
Right.
Yeah?
Right.
And at some point, you know, I also looked at the players, and at some point you tune out if you do always the same thing. Huh?
Sure. So, sure.
And that's why it, for me, as of right now, it's a little bit like a contest, because I'm always trying to make warm-ups different.
Yes. Yeah?
The menu that I follow is almost always the same. Yeah. We start with some joint movements. Yeah. And this, I like to do things starting on the floor, and there we just move the hip, we move the shoulders, we move the scaps. We also do still some dynamic stretching. But the big difference to the past is that back then I would always ask them to do things in a particular way. Yeah. I want you to do it like this. Yeah. But this is completely gone. I really try to, it's like in these dynamic stretches, for example, I do not correct anymore, because I want them to to figure things out themselves. Yeah. Let's say if you do a reverse lunge, back then I would always let them do the reverse lunge with the perfect technique. Yeah. Now I'm like, okay, do a reverse lunge. I want your right arm or your right hand reaches to the right. Next rep, you reach different. Then you try to do something else again. Yeah. So that things are never, ever the same. And in the beginning, players were also like a little bit confused with that, because that's right. something, you know, that's something kind of upcoming. And the big buzzword is here, I guess, variability.
Yes.
Because I think we learn in a much better way where you need to do things different constantly instead of doing always the right thing. This is then called block practice. And I think over time with block practice, you just get worse.
Absolutely.
So what I do, coming back to the warm-up, you know, we always start with some joint mobilizations. Yeah. And again, I switch things up. I let them reach with the upper body somewhere else constantly. I let them do crossover steps. I'm not going to say it's random, because there's still a thought process behind it, but it's different constantly. And in the end of the warm-up, we always play a game.
Yes.
Because these games, I got to say, what I have usually observed is when you read a lot of studies, for example, there is most of the time there is a big gap between the theory and the practical part. And with small-sided games, I think they are just awesome in theory, but they are even better in practice.
Okay.
Because when you think about that, what's going to happen when you play games? Usually the players are way more involved. The sure. atmosphere during the game is through the roof.
Absolutely.
You create situations where the players constantly have to self-organize themselves, and where they have to constantly look to find solutions. So I also like to say that the demands of small-sided games, they are very, very close to the demands for my context, basketball. And it's basically training without training, because the players, they don't really think about the fact that they are warming up. They are just so immersed into whatever the goal is of the game that that they also reach intensities of how they move, which they would never achieve when I would, for example, ask them to run from the, I don't know, from the baseline to the midline and try to increase your speed doing that.
Right.
For example, there's like a very nice example that I can show. On game days, for example, I always split the group up after my warm-up, after, you know, after my stuff is done. I still split them up in, let's say, groups of six. And one group is in one corner of the court and the other group is diagonally on the other corner of the court. Okay. And everybody has a ball. So what I tell them, they need to throw up the ball in the air, and they're starting at the baseline from the corner. They need to throw up the air. Throw up the ball in the air, and then I tell them, you know, after three bounces, you have to make a layup on the other side. So, and I once talked to a player, this is like 2 or 3 weeks ago, and we were talking exactly about that, and I was like, hey, what do you think is the goal of this? Why do you think we do it? And then the player said, yeah, because you want us to go for some layups, to warm up. Hmm. And then I told him, yeah, maybe. Yeah, it's not wrong what you're saying.
Yeah.
But in the end, I just want you to accelerate.
Yes. Yeah. Right.
And you just pay so much attention to the basketball that you really don't think about the fact that you are actually like running over the whole court
to get your
body in gear for the shoot around that we're about to do.
Right.
And you know, if you can make something like this happen as a coach, you know, that the player really forget what they're actually doing.
Right.
I think you're doing more right than wrong.
Yes. Yes. Oh, man. See, and this is why I think your page to me stands out, because even as a coach, I'm really trying to maximize my training sessions and maximize the players that I have in front of me. And obviously when I first started coaching, it was very much some of the more historical references in terms of what a warm-up should look like, what a cool-down should look like, what a shell drill. And obviously everyone starts from somewhere, but as you kind of see how the game has evolved and you start to look at training techniques, and even you just highlighted, you know, the block training versus the varied and the benefits, you really start to realize just how fun and innovative certain things can be. It doesn't need to be so systematic, because then you don't get that much out of players. And even just in terms of in basketball, coach, how would you say how crucial is mobility for player performance, and what specific mobility exercises do you prioritize in your training program?
I mean, with my background in terms of the FRC certification that I just mentioned, who really focuses on mobility, you know, here it's basically the same. Whenever the guys come in for practice, before we starting, you know, we do a screening, of course, in the beginning of the season. And when I see something where I'm like, okay, maybe here we need a little bit of work.
Yeah, yeah,
they get like, I call it, they get their daily vitamins, which they have to do. But I always try to keep these things very simple, because in my experience, you know, one max two things. Otherwise, if you give them three things, then they're not gonna do it. So that's why I try to keep it as simple as possible. And with these daily vitamins, there is sometimes can be mobility things. It can be strengthening the quads, for example, if somebody deals with jumper's knee. This is very individual, because everybody is different, and I need to look at the player based on their injury history, because you know, previous injury is the biggest indicator for future injury. That's why we really have to focus on the areas that have been injured before. Because in the end, you mentioned longevity earlier.
Absolutely.
Our primary goal is to keep them on the court, because I think if our coach can choose from the full roster, there's a better chance of us for winning games.
Right.
So coming back to your question, We always include some mobility drills on court when I start my warm up. That's why when I said I like to start seated, because this is then also a gradual progression. Right. When we start seated, we do some 90-90s, we do some transitions, some bear sits, stuff like that, to try to move the big joints in the biggest possible ranges on a constantly basis. It's tough for me to give you now really like examples, right. since I don't have a video available or something like that. Right. But like I said, 90-90, some rock backs where one knee is on the pad. We're gonna do rock backs from a standing position. We constantly rotate the shoulders. We do some scap work, stuff right. like that. But always in at some point you cannot reinvent the wheel.
Sure.
I'm getting to a point where I'm like also I'm not gonna, where I'm a little bored of the stuff that I do because. Things repeat themselves.
Right.
But what I've started lately, and this is amazing. I've never thought that this would be such a big addition, because lately I started including the players into my warm up, because now, for example, I'm like, okay, player X, Y, that I want you to do this. Go ahead. The other guys, they have to be copycats. So, for example, I put them in a circle. That's what I do for game day at the end of my part when we have shoot around in the morning on game day.
Right.
This is now a standard what I do. I let them once the warm up is done, I still let them position themselves in a circle, and they know what's coming now. And I pick one, yeah? And the guys who are standing in a circle, they are the copycats. And the guy who's in the middle, he has to do something.
Yes.
And that something depends on the model that I give him. Yeah. So I sometimes, and there are 1,000 things you could do. Sometimes I tell a guy, okay, you're a boxer. And then the guy is moving like a boxer. Or sometimes, I mean, last game, I told the guy, hey, you're a belly dancer. And you can imagine what happens with the atmosphere if one guy is trying to dance as a belly dancer and all the other guys are the copycats, and they have to mimic what the guy in the middle is doing.
Right.
And that, again, now we're talking again about the variability, yeah, because they simply move different. They step out of their basketball world and do something in a different way, and I think this enriches the motor panel of players. In the end, nobody can ever say to what that leads to, if it helps us being more healthier. I mean, if you ask me, I would say yes, but nobody will ever be able to tell me. But I at least know that I get the atmosphere going, that I get the gym pumped, and that, from there they can go into their skill-based warm-up, which the basketball coaches will do.
Right.
So, right. Yeah.
See, and I think that's one thing, even just in the past, I've been fortunate enough to have guests where their later profession became basketball, but they came up in such a sport-rich community or family. They played tennis, they did gymnastics, martial arts, and they start to realize that some of these raw skills that they're learning in terms of balance, agility, teamwork, communication can translate over into basketball. So one thing you kind of highlight was super key is that you don't necessarily want to teach basketball specific exercises or drills, because I understand the sport is basketball, but you're dealing with the human body at the end of the day. So
the
human body needs to be able to move in certain ways, not just for that sport, but just again, like we've always spoken about, longevity as well. So that's one thing again that I absolutely love. And even with your experience, coach, when you get some fresh players coming to the practices, what are you assessing? Are you looking at how they change speed, how they change direction, how their alignment is looking, their footwork? Like, what are some of the things that kind of stick out to you when you're assessing some of these players?
Mm-hmm. The first thing that I do when we sign a player, after he signs, our Sports director sends me his contact right away, and the first thing that I do is this particular player will receive an online questionnaire from me, because sometimes, you know, it's always a little bit different. Some players you sign early in the off season, some players you only sign 2 days before the start of training camp.
Okay.
So the more time we have, the better it is for me to set them up for training. So, and in this online questionnaire, I'll ask things like, you know, like I mentioned before, previous injuries. Because if I know that somebody had last season, I don't know, a groin injury or an adductor injury, then I know that, you know, this guy has to work on that area.
Yes.
Constantly during the season when he's with us. Because I know, like I said before, previous injury is the biggest indicator for future injury. And this is the way how I individualize training, then also in season. But if that player is still in the US and I have time, I can tailor my workout schedule that I'm about to send him in a better way.
Right.
Because I know what was hurting previously needs to be addressed. But, you know, that's not the only thing I'm asking. I'm also asking things like, hey, what is your how would you describe your relationship to the weight room? And then they can say on a scale 1 to 10, yeah, 1 means I hate it and 10 means gym rat.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Because I need to know. Yes. I need to know, because not every player has the same passion that I have for lifting. Right. Yeah. So, and if a player, I don't know, rates that with a 4, I know, okay, he doesn't really like to be in the weight room. He's still, you know, I still need to find a mutual agreement with him that he needs to do a few things in order to improve his capacity for basketball.
Right.
Yeah, or in order to maintain his capacity. And with that, I think the times where the S&C coach says, okay, guys, everybody barbell deadlift, here we go. This is what I want you to do. That's what everybody needs to do. I think these times are over.
Yes.
At least to my mind, because, you know, in the end, I give the players a lot of freedom when it comes to exercise selection. I ask them that's also something that I ask in the online questionnaire. What are things that you like doing in the weight room and what are things that you don't like? Because, you know, if somebody tells me I really like split squats and I hate barbell back squats, yeah, why would I prescribe barbell back squats then? Yeah,
right.
I mean,
right.
Yeah, and this then also helps me for tailoring the program that I'm about to send them a little better. And this is how we do it. Every player during the season, we have 2 mandatory lifting sessions. But if a player is interested and wants to lift more, they can lift 4 times a week. That's no problem.
Okay.
I just try to, you know, and the player who doesn't like lifting, he still needs to lift 2 times
yes.
a week.
Right.
But a player who wants to even build, or like a youth player, they have to lift 4 times. And some guys even, that's rare, but this year I have one guy who likes to lift 5 times. And then we microdose, of course, because we want him to be fresh at
right.
when the game comes.
Right.
But going back to your question, you asked me what I addressed during screening, right? That was the original question.
Yes.
When it comes to screening, I also changed my mind there lately, because I think screening, it's not about figuring out performance related infos. I mean, it's also about that, but for me, the bigger importance of that is that you want to make sure you get some reference values in case somebody sustains an injury, where you can then base your return to competition on.
Okay.
So this is for me the number one reason while we
right.
do screenings. It's not about the physical capabilities. It is also about that. We have a force plate, for example, but all these data that we're gathering there, again, is for me more important in terms of reference values. Because in professional basketball, especially in Germany, it's, you know, I'm not going to say it's very rare, but it is rare that players stay longer than 1 year. And that's why you want to make sure that I do everything in my power of helping the player to hopefully stay healthy.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's also why I like to speak of health, of lifting sessions. I think the more we can do, the better health promoting this might be for the player. That doesn't mean that we should lift every day. I mean, there are ways you could go about that as well if you really microdose. But for example, if we play, I mean, we don't play a European competition. That's why we basically have one game a week. But sometimes the schedule is a little bit more comprised.
Right.
If that's the right word.
Right.
And then, for example, if we play on Saturday and have our next game on, let's just say, Wednesday, what I would do on the Saturday, I would just make them lift after the game so that they can fully recover on Sunday, that they don't even have to come to the gym. If the schedule is very dense, then we do something like that.
Okay.
But if we play Saturday, then we stick to our usual routine, which means that we have like one day after the game, if we played Saturday, it would be the Sunday, we have a recovery session.
Right.
The next day, the Monday, would usually be off. Because in that way, they basically have one and a half days off in between. And I think we are underestimating recovery.
Well said.
I think it's important to give them...
Well said.
Yeah, I think it's important to give them... Yeah, to give them days where they can also get their head of things.
Yes.
But I'm constantly reevaluating that. Sometimes I'm also like, maybe we should do more. But on the other hand, as of right now, I think it works quite well. But like I said, I'm constantly monitoring that, and
yes.
I'm constantly asking myself, okay, how can I maybe do things different to even get more efficient with the things I'm doing?
Right.
Yeah. But this is. Right. It's not easy, and that sometimes I like to say sometimes that it's sad that it's really tough to evaluate things because there are so many variables you cannot account for. Huh? I mean, you can do the theoretical best practice if that even exists. Let's just assume it does. But the player is then from 24 hours, he's 21 hours at home, yeah? And if a player makes the wrong decisions in that time span, the practice that he do just does not matter. Yeah?
Very true as well, yeah.
I mean, on the one hand, this is sad. On the other hand, this is also the beauty of it, I think. Because
right.
there is not one way of going about things. And nobody can do any magic, yeah? I think everybody puts their pants on one leg at a time. So, you know, there's no magic, and everybody has to face reality, and everybody, I think, has to come up with a program and constantly needs to reevaluate the program if it's working or not.
Right. You see, and well, first of all, you sound like something that I think is so key, and even, I mean, I'm sure you get it quite a few times, coach, you know, players coming up to us saying, you know, I'm working out Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. But I'm like, it's just making sure that they understand rest is just as important as getting the reps in, whether that's skill-based or just from a functional movement base as well. Like, rest is definitely a part of it, you know, like getting that stretch routine and things of that nature. But for yourself, coach, like, how do you define high performance in basketball, and what factors do you focus on to achieve it with your team?
That's an interesting question. I mean, I think a lot of it goes into the availability kind of thing.
Yes.
I think when players are more available for practices and games, I think I'm doing something right. Yeah. I like to say you can affect things positively or negatively in my profession.
Right.
And I obviously want to impact things more in a positive way. But again, nobody can ever give you how should I say this? Nobody can ever tell you if you do things rather right or rather wrong.
Yes.
But this is a little bit also where I see the transfer of lifting, for example.
Okay.
I think the transfer of lifting, I think there is a secondary transfer that's more important. And the with secondary transfer, I mean, you know, when you are when you expose yourself to lifting on a regular basis, yeah, you get stronger.
Right.
Strength is relative, you know. Your strength is different than mine. Yeah.
Right.
But whenever you're stronger, I think that everything that you do on the court comes to a lower cost. Yeah. And when basketball comes to a lower cost, because you're simply stronger, then you can also recover faster.
Very true.
From the training sessions and from the games. Yeah. And it also means that you can practice probably longer and even harder when you have a good level of strength. And this for me is the secondary transfer of lifting. Because you're simply able to practice your skill on a more regular basis. And in the end, if you want to be a better basketball player, you're not going to improve in the weight room on that. Yeah, maybe a little bit when you look at physical aspects of it. But in the end, you need to practice the skill. And right. This is where lifting comes in. And this is for me the biggest contribution of lifting. And coming back to your question, this is for me, you know, that's what I try to, that's where I try to help the guys to hopefully stay relatively injury free, or let's reduce the risk of injuries, because then you can practice your skill way more often and with the higher intensities. And, you know, if you can do this on a regular basis over and over and over and over again without hopefully, you know, while increasing the risk of getting injured, then you can also get better at basketball. And this is where, you know, basketball is driving the bus. It's not me.
Right.
It's not
right.
My
it's
stuff
true.
in the weight room. You know, if I do something with the guys and they come in on the next day and, I don't know, tell me that their back hurts because we did heavy deadlifts and the guy was not used to it before. Yeah, I think then I've done a bad job, because
right.
I like to say that everything that we do off the court should hopefully promote what we're about to do on the court.
On the court,
so
absolutely.
it should not be a distraction from that.
Right.
Yeah, this is a little bit where I see my main role. And then also, you know, with load, like with how we construct the weeks of practices, like with load monitoring, how we, when do we have a high day, when do we have a low day?
Yes.
This is also very important, I think, because, you know, because there we can make a lot of mistakes too. If we all
sure.
of a sudden practice 3 hours when you're just used to 1 hour and 30 minutes,
right.
Then you also run into the run the risk that something happens. Yeah.
Right.
And this is where I consider, you know, my job, and this is where I like to see performance. You know, if I can affect all these things in a positive way. And the players also enjoy lifting. This is important for me. Then, like I said earlier, then I probably do more stuff right than wrong.
Right. And that's the delicate dance that coaches have, just in terms of, I mean, me as a basketball coach, I'm just looking at offensively, defensively, skill-wise, and just decision-making. I'm balancing old philosophies versus new philosophies, and I'm really trying to find the happy medium. Obviously, it's varied according to the team and the players that are presented before me, but for yourself, coach, just especially on that topic, how do you balance traditional training methods with incorporating new technologies and even methodologies just to stay at the forefront of performance and basketball training?
I mean, I'm happy in Vechta. We have a force plate.
Nice.
And that, you know, that it's something that's kind of coming up also now in Germany. Of course, the US is ages ahead.
Yes. right.
But, you know, we have a really unique talent here that has the capabilities of even making it to the NBA. And with this guy, I explore force plates. I kind of try to figure out within a kind of movement jump where his strength is, but also where his weaknesses are. And what I came to understand now, just to give you an idea about how difficult it can sometimes be. You know, when I started using force plates, I only looked at jump height, but this is, let's say this is only the tip of the iceberg, because right. You can look at so many things at contraction time, breaking phases, unweighing, stuff like this. And for me, this was all new. But with this guy, we are looking now, we're trying to, for example, improve his contraction time. But what I was finding out after, like, let's say 8 months of testing, we always try to test every 2 weeks, and he would reach his highest jump heights whenever he had a basketball individual before, and whenever he did not have a basketball individual before, his jump heights were just also his contraction time. Contraction time would be longer, jump heights would be lower. Okay. So, and then I was like, yeah, I mean, of course, you should aim to always test at the same time in order to really compare the results to one another. But what we really figured out now is by always trying to test at the same time, at the same day of the week,
right?
We are now getting to a point where he can replicate the numbers that he was able to achieve after individual basketball practice. We're getting to a point where he's able to do that now without the basketball practice before.
Right.
So he's able to reach similar heights compared to his best jump heights with lower contraction times, and he's also more consistent with the jump heights. So
okay.
Now I'm saying, okay, good. We might be improving something here, and that then is also nice for the player to see, because I communicate these things, of course. And this is where I am right now. It's really it's a deep dive into force plate metrics and like all the parameters you have, and it is really incredible. And yeah, in the end, I always try to keep things as simple as possible. And yeah, this is where I am right now. This is the latest what I'm dealing with.
Nice.
And of course, it's always about load management and how we like schedule our practice days.
Right.
What is our, like, how many days of preparation do we have for a game and stuff like that.
Right. And just before we wrap up, Coach, we've just entered the quick hitter segment. And the first one, I'm super curious just to get your mind now. This answer can be from a basketball standpoint or even from a performance standpoint. What would you say, Coach, is a skill that is taught by many but only mastered by a few?
Putting it all into perspective.
Okay. I like that. That's a first. That is a first. Okay. Understood. And why do you mean that, Coach?
Yeah, like I said earlier, I think it's really difficult to account for all the variables. We simply can't, you know, when it comes to performance. And that is why we have to take things with a pinch of salt constantly. Yeah, and like I said, this is on the one side, it is maybe a little bit demoralizing or annoying. But on the other side, like I said, it's also the beauty of it. I think everything when it comes to performance is always a mixture of science and art. And
yes.
That's why everybody does the performance, like the job of the performance coach or strength and conditioning coach, everybody just, you know, adds a certain something to it. And that's what I consider art. And in, you know, there's also a lot of science involved. But I also like to say, if you don't really have experience, I think experience is something vital, because you learn, you constantly learn from your experience. At least that's how I go about it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I think that's the beauty of it.
Nice. Love that. That is a first, and it's a very, very, very valid point. Loving that, coach.
Yeah. Next. Thank you. And you know, there's no magic. That's what I said earlier.
Sure.
So sure. You got to find out what's working, and if it's not working, you got to reevaluate and change a little bit, and right. Then you got to reevaluate again.
Absolutely. The next one is the best piece of advice you ever received.
Ooh la la. The best piece of advice. Poh.
Sounds like a lot.
Yeah, there's. Yeah, that's also one of my my most favorite quote, because that is something I see or I deal with on a regular basis.
Right.
I found the quote, and I have no clue whoever said that. But the quote is, maybe it's a little bit too negative. I'm not sure. I think it's just honest. If you are not consistent, you can't say it didn't work. So that's what I like to bring across with players all the time. Because in my experience, if somebody's knee hurts, and I tell him two things that he needs to do on a regular basis. Sometimes what I've seen a lot is the fact that players do it then for 1, 2, 3 days, and then they tell me, yeah, it's not better, it's not working. And then I'm like, no, you got to stay on that for the next 3 to 4 weeks.
There we go.
And if it then doesn't work, then we have to readjust. But before you don't put in the work and do it on a regular basis, you simply... You can't say it didn't work. That's not how the body works. So you got to be consistent with things. And if they don't work, you have to reevaluate.
Well said. Consistency is definitely key. And just the final two before we wrap up, coach, is I want you to fill in the blank here, but I've got a sentence that says, if it wasn't for sports, or for you, it could be basketball or just the field that you're in, I wouldn't have learnt filling the blank about myself.
I wouldn't have learnt how passionate you could be for something. Because I would have never imagined that I was ever going to be so passionate for something.
Right.
And you know, it's always, people always say you got to find your passion.
Yes.
And I'm just happy that I did, because whenever I do something, even if we're not practicing, yeah, I like to read, I like to further educate myself. And like I think I mentioned in the beginning, this fire keeps burning. And as long as it does, I'm happy with what I'm doing.
That's amazing. That is amazing. I mean, I think just for sure being passionate is super key. Super key. And just the final one, coach, is, and I'm super curious to get your answer on this one, is what would the title of your autobiography be?
These are nice questions.
And please feel free.
I think the road, I like a good one. I think I have it. The road to success is always under construction.
Wait, coach, pause, because that hit me, and that just sums up the message in this podcast. Like just break down, why do you mean that? Because that is amazing, honestly. I like that a lot. I really like that.
Yeah, you know, when it there, you will lose games. That is just part of it. Yeah, and you can decide of how you want to adjust, like, how do you want to go about it? Yeah. And sometimes, you know, some losses, they're hard, they hurt. Yeah. But I think this is how you get better. And I've experienced it here with one of our young players. He's so dedicated, yeah, into what he's doing. And sometimes a loss can really hit him. But we talked about this topic, and he also really likes this quote. And you just got to handle it. And also, I like to say that the process will never be linear. Yeah, you Very will true. Not progress every day. It's not possible. But if you are fully committed to the process, yeah, then there are times when you maybe dip a little bit. But if you're truly dedicated, the dip won't be as low, and then at some point it will go up again. So that's what I like about the quote, you know. Physical preparation or training, the process will never be linear. Yeah?
Absolutely.
Yeah. But
Absolutely.
As long as the trajectory is up, even if it's just, you know, a very small, subtle increase over a long period of time, you will still improve.
Right. Right. I mean, just what a great note just to end on. I mean, I know for myself, it's been absolutely insightful just to, you know, sit down and speak with you, Coach. And all the info will be in the description where they can find you on Instagram. So please, listeners, make sure you share this episode, follow him, because honestly, just even, you don't even need to be a coach, just as a player, if you want to know just innovative ways to get warmed up, having the muscles activated, you know, I think following him honestly is definitely just going to open up your mind just to new concepts, new ways of thinking, and just new ways to get your mind and body alert. So this is myself and Coach Dominic signing out.